Buster, you don't want to do video? You don't have to.
Yeah, you don't want to see me.
Are you just totally stark naked right now?
Yeah, mostly.
I feel like every time we do video, Leander's wearing a black t-shirt.
Oh, that's Leander's uniform.
That's his go-to. Either that or he never changes and he never showers. I'm ready when you are. Just let me know.
Yep, let's go.
Okay.
Do it.
All right, here we go. Hello! Welcome to the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Jeffrey Elijah, and joining me today, he came to America with a suitcase, a long flowing mane, and a dream. Leander Caney is here. Hey, Leander. I know you still got the suitcase and the dream. What happened to the mane?
Over 25 years, yeah, it's no more.
Also joining us, I have no doubt he'll one day become the brawny paper towel model. Buster Hein is here.
Hey.
Hey, Buster.
How's it going?
Dude, you're going to look so good on that brawny paper towel roll.
Oh, you think so? I don't have the hair on the top, though. I need
a man. Yeah.
But you got that real clean, manly look with like the shaved head and the beard and just the smile of gold.
Okay.
Ladies are going to, like, their sales are going to increase a lot when your face goes on there. They're not going to be able to keep those things in stock. All right.
That's a weird one. What gave you the idea for that?
Because he kind of looks like him.
Are you that desperate? You've completely run out of ideas.
Completely run out of ideas. I'm just going to start going through commercial products and
right, I know.
On the package.
I thought you must have had one like on the kitchen counter or something. Like...
No, but I saw one recently and I was like, that does kind of look manly like Buster. Because Buster's a manly man. And that's the kind of guy they want to put on the brawny paper towel roll. It's like, put Buster in a flannel shirt. Hand him a hatchet or something, boom, he's ready for his packaging debut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about some Apple stuff this show. We do have a lot of Apple stuff to chat about, so many good tidbits. And also, if you stay tuned till the end, we're going to be doing a What We're Into segment where we just kind of talk about whatever it is we're into. And I'm interested to hear what you jolly old gentlemen are into these days. And also, we had a fun week with E3 happening. If you're into video games, I got some cool picks from E3 that were titillating, at least to me. Before we jump into the fun, I want to thank QuickBooks for supporting this episode. QuickBooks Self-Employed helps you separate your business and personal expenses. Plus, it takes the guesswork out of your estimated quarterly and year-end taxes and makes it easy to pay what you owe, which if you have a business, you know what a pain in the arse all of that stuff I just talked about is. Find out what QuickBooks Self-Employed can do for you and receive 50% off at tryselfemployed.com/cultcast. That's tryselfemployed.com/cultcast. And it is that time of the year again. Friends, we are doing a Cultcast survey to learn more about you, our beloved listeners. And here's why we do this. If you've listened to this show for a while, you know we are fully supported by our sponsors so we can keep the show free. And we want to make sure we're talking about things that actually interest you, like bustersbeardkits.com, leandersribboningoutfits.net. These are the services we know you love. And that's because you have, through our anonymous survey, giving us details about your likes, your dislikes. So if you would, we had a huge participation last time. We would appreciate that again. And plus, the survey has been rewritten. Even if you've taken it, it's different this time. Head on over to podsurvey.com/cult. That's podsurvey.com/cult. Please take our survey. It helps us so much. And we want to make sure we're talking about things that you're actually interested in on this show. That is of utmost importance to us. Plus, you'll be entered, or you'll have an opportunity to enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card that we give away every month. That's podsurvey.com/cults. Okay, Leander Caney, it is your time to shine. Before the show, you were telling us that you were on the PBS podcast recently where they all talk to you like this. Welcome, Leander Caney. We're so excited to have you here. Can you tell by my voice? I just can't wait to hear you talk about iAds, mobile blocking, and privacy. So please, well, Leander.
Yeah, it's not the PBS podcast. It's a
it's a PBS subsidiary. Okay, it's like the local PBS podcast.
Yeah, right.
Okay, exactly. Got it.
And it's Media Twits, right? So it's a media podcast, and they're everyone's all up in arms about the Apple News app.
Yeah, actually going to ask you about this. I'm glad you brought it up.
Right, and but also the the ad blocking that they've added to iOS 9.
Mm-hmm.
So the two, the two seem to be in related.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, the news app. I mean, I signed up during the keynote. I submitted our RSS feed,
mm-hmm.
Thinking, oh my god, another nail in our coffin, because who knows, it could be. You don't want people to start reading Cult of Mac on the news app instead of on the web. Well, we don't anyway.
Right.
But based on the experience that we've had with Flipboard, which has actually been pretty great. We get a lot of traffic on Flipboard.
Yeah.
And they include us in their advertising platform, like I think for about a year now.
Uh-huh.
Maybe less, 9 months. And initially it was really great. It was incredible, in fact. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is, really a big deal. But it's been completely spiky and up and down, like mm-hmm. some months it's sort of settled down to this kind of, we'll take it, but it doesn't make a big difference for us. Which is a shame because, it gets a lot of, millions and millions of readers on and interactions. And, the stories mm-hmm. get millions of views on Flipboard. Mm-hmm. And if Apple, if they're going to do this by default, and it's going to be front and center, one of the Apple apps that you can't delete and can't get rid of, it could be a big deal. It could be, we could get a lot of new readers, I think, through that.
Two things. So one of the big pieces of controversy this week about that Apple News app was, didn't they send out an email to people who publish material and say, basically, unless you respond back to us and let us know you don't want us to, you're giving us, your explicit authorization to use your content in the news app, and people were pretty pissed about that.
Right, and, display ads again next to it. We won't put any ads in it, just next to it.
Oh, so they're going to be monetizing it.
Yeah, and keeping that's what it said.
And would they be splitting the money with the advertiser or person whose content it belongs to?
Yeah, it wasn't clear from the email they sent out. The email they sent out, it was like, oh, we're opting you in. If you don't want to be included, send us an email saying, opt out or whatever in the subject line. And then it said, oh, by the way, here are the terms and conditions, and we reserve the right to do this, this, and this. And one of them was like, monetize it, which is pretty rich. And it didn't mention how they were going to share it, although I think during the keynote they said that they were going to share revenue with the publishers, and it was going to be a pretty good split. But, the weird thing is, why is Apple doing a news app? I mean, how does it help publishers? The news... what was it called? Newsstand, right? Mm-hmm. Was when they launched that, it was like, okay, what we're gonna try and help journalism and publishing. And I remember Jobs talking about it, saying that this is our attempt to like to create sort of a marketplace, a new marketplace for content. And it, unfortunately, it hasn't worked out. It's turned out to be a huge disaster. But this new one, I think, is kind of, I don't know, they haven't expressed those ambitions.
And the other thing is, this is kind of scary, I would imagine, as a publisher, having Apple be in control of these new streams that people see, and they have some proprietary, algorithm going through and serving news to people. And this is total conspiracy theory, but couldn't it be possible that if you, as a outlet, start saying things that Apple doesn't like,
right,
you could all of a sudden just disappear from people's, from the forefront of their news feed?
Well, right, exactly. Yeah, there are all kinds of questions. I mean, that was the other thing as well that has appeared, is that they're looking for human editors, and that's kind of a mixed that could be a mixed blessing too. Like on the one hand, of course, it's better, I think, to have a human being instead of a robot in charge of making news selections, and human editors have always been better than if you look at Google News. I mean, case in point, there's a whole bunch of junk in there that gets in because Google's robots are choosing algorithmically, but then. You look at something like TechMeme, which mm-hmm. is supposedly, also run by algorithms, and it's supposed to be some kind of somewhat objective roundup of what's in the news and who's commenting on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's totally dominated by a few sources. And if you look at their leaderboards, it's kind of weird. I mean, there's, half of it is genuine, is generally news sources that break news, and then half of it is there are kind of some strange inclusions there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because, you know, they have human editors and they clearly have their favorites. And, you know, the selections are based upon the, you know, the prejudices and the subjective biases of the editors over there.
Yeah, but the editors would be paid by Apple. So now you have a team of Apple editors curating things for people to read. And if you were critical of Apple,
right,
my guess is an editor who they're paying is going to stop including you in the popular streams.
Right. That could be very true. And it could be, but it could be for other reasons too. You know, they just don't like your name. They don't like you. They don't like, you know, or they prefer other publications that they choose from all the time. You know, I mean, like, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of things that, you know, you could be worried about. And of course, this is the post, you know, what they're calling the post website publishing era. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the last 10 years, you know, we saw a blossoming of media on the web, you know, the big mainstream media, but also from, you know, the independent publishers like ourselves. I mean, mm-hmm. we never could have existed without the web. There's no way, mm-hmm. you know, I would still be working for Wired mm-hmm. or some other publication. And, you know, and that, but now we're sort of moving into this new era on mobile that's really sketchy about, you know, how anyone is going to make any money and stay alive. And all of these different things are really worrisome, you know, things to worry about. I mean, if I thought about it, I'd be stay up all night.
I know, just hearing you talk about it, now I'm kind of bummed now.
It is a bummer because, you know, like they were saying, you know, I know that our, you know, our, like the New York Times was in the news this week saying that, you know, they've now turned off. If you work for the New York Times, you can't even get the desktop site anymore. They've completely turned it off. You can only see the mobile site. Because they want everyone to become, you know, fully aware that a full 50% of their traffic is now coming from mobile.
Wow.
And yet they don't make any money from it at all. It's like 10%. And we have exactly the same situation here. We publish on mobile, but, the money we make to support the company comes through the desktop.
Right.
And it's only going to grow, you know. And you can easily imagine that it's going to be 80, 90% at some point in the near future. And you know, not only that, you know, it's going to be on Facebook and, you know, Snapchat and all these other platforms that aren't monetized for us at all.
Right. And are repurposing your content, which benefits them and makes it easy for consumers. I mean, I think about the apps that I use to get my news, and now actually my primary one is Newsify now, which is basically exactly like the Apple News app, which just aggregates all these different websites that I've selected into one solid stream that I can just peruse through. But all those sites must be making nothing off that content because I'm just perusing it for free. And we're back. Sorry about that. We seem to be having some audio issues today. You know, sometimes that's just how things go. But let's go ahead and move on. And Buster, why don't we talk a little bit about the story you were just alluding to? Did you break your Apple Watch?
Oh, I have two. I may have broken both Apple devices recently.
Phone and your Apple Watch?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Buster.
I accidentally fell into a river while carrying my iPhone in the Grand Canyon.
You fell in a river in the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
The river?
He fell into
a creek, a little like, you know. But, and so, yeah, it actually, like, worked for, like, a week, and then it just busted on me, like, everything. But, yeah, I went swimming. I went cliff diving last weekend, and me and my buddies were hiking, and then all of a sudden I realized my Apple Watch wasn't on me anymore. And we were like, oh, shit. I was like, when did it come off? How did it come off? And it must have come off when I went cliff jumping, like, when I hit the water. It must have, I don't know. Pulled off
like the pressure of the water hitting your wrist just unlatched it.
Yeah, I guess so. Which I hadn't even thought of that happening.
Oh, yeah. And
so I totally lost it, and I definitely thought it was gone because it was either I left it like by the side and somebody probably picked it up, or it was, you know, down at the bottom of the creek. And then we go back, and to be honest, I wasn't really that bummed when I thought I lost it, but.
Well, with your history, that's like the least valuable device that you've lost.
Yeah, true.
Or broken, like, in a canyon.
Yeah, my buddies are like, oh, that sucks, man. Are you bummed? And I was like, I don't know. It is just a watch, you know. Uh-huh. It's not my iPhone.
Yeah.
But then we did find it, which was pretty, like, my cousin, like, had his, like, snorkel gear and stuff. So he, like, did some swimming around, and he actually did find it, and it totally worked. It was like underwater for an hour, like 5 feet deep, and
wow.
It's still totally fine.
That is incredible that he found it.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. If I had like the all space black one like Leander has, I never would have found it.
Right. Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I could just see a little sliver of like the aluminum shining, and that was it.
Cool.
I lost a flip-flop in the ocean once, and I looked down and looked away for a second, looked down, and my flip-flop was just gone. And I was like, there's no way we're ever going to find this again. And we didn't. And I was pretty bummed about that.
Flip-flop.
I lost a flip-flop. Actually, we were in Croatia, and I lost my flip-flop in the water. And it's like, you're at the beach in Croatia. You don't have any shoes. It's not like you can just go and buy a pair of flip-flops somewhere. So I was pretty bummed about that. But I think I'd be even more bummed if I lost my Apple Watch. And hearing you describe it, it makes total sense, because you look at the watch band and it just has that little nub that holds the band in place. So with enough pressure, it would totally just come out. It would totally get pulled out of place.
Yeah, I didn't notice it come off. And I mean, I had never thought of that, because we were probably only jumping from like 20 feet. So, you know, it wasn't
like... Is that not very high for you? Like, is that normally...
No, that's not...
Oh, of course not.
That's not that high. Yeah.
20 feet. Seems pretty high.
Yeah, 20 feet in my book is a cliff.
Yeah. 20 feet's pretty high, Buster. What's the highest you've ever gone?
Only the highest I've ever gone is 60. That's not... Dang. That's not
60.
Yeah, but you can go.
That's almost like jumping from the edge of the atmosphere.
Did you have an oxygen tank with you for the descent?
60 feet?
He was wearing like one of those wing suits.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Base jumping.
Yeah, did you have a bungee attached?
I had a little
Buster?
Parachute to slow me down at the very end.
So, Buster, did you lose your phone as well?
No, I didn't lose my phone. My phone, I just had that in my backpack.
Okay, good. Because that would have made a Apple Watch that you've lost, the Nikon lens that...
Dude.
Did you drop that into a ravine?
Oh, yeah. That got dropped into a waterfall.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking. Did you ever get another one of those, or was that just the end of that one?
No, that was the end. I was just like...
That was the end of your photography career?
Yeah, forget nice cameras, man. I can't be trusted with gadgets. I just break them accidentally too often.
You live such an adventurous lifestyle, though. For those that don't know, Buster, I mean, you hike like every weekend, don't you? And you went on like a Grand Canyon trip or something?
Yeah.
And what did you guys do for the whole week while you were there? Just kind of pal around?
What did we do? I don't know. It was like a 4-day trip, 3-day, you know, nights or something. We just
hiking through the Grand Canyon?
Hiking, looking at waterfalls, we went to like this really remote cave where it's like the source of this creek and everything. But, you know, humans never like go that far. And you can, you know, go way back into this cave. It kind of freaked me out.
Did you find any skeletons in there? Skeletons?
Nah, I did find a blow-up canoe. That was about it.
Oh, bummer. No, like, skeletons holding on to, like, a ruby or anything like that?
No.
That's, like, the beginning of, like, a Goonies movie, I guess.
Well, there supposedly is, like, a lost city or something like that in the Grand Canyon they used to talk about.
Yeah.
Find that.
I'm sure it's in there somewhere. You should look for it next time you're there. Okay, well... Let's go ahead and talk about some Apple Watch news here, Buster. So we got a report this week that, of course, Apple is already hard at work on the Apple Watch. And the next version is supposed to have some updates that we don't have in our current Apple Watch. I almost kind of hate reading about these things because...
Do you?
I just got my Apple Watch, dude.
Oh, well, that's the other thing. It's I'm like, they did just come out with this, you know. When are they going to announce this new one? That can't come out that soon, right?
Well, you would hope not, but it's looking like it's going to be 2016. And if the reports hold true, then one of the features that the Apple Watch is supposed to get is a FaceTime video camera, which I thought was a little odd.
You do?
Yeah, Leander, does a FaceTime video camera sound like something you'd be interested in on an Apple Watch?
To stand up people's noses? No. Horrible.
Right?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be cool.
No, I couldn't imagine a worse experience. It's impossible to take a phone call on it, let alone holding one up, you know, holding it up to your face to make a phone call.
I thought you were liking taking phone calls on it. Hmm? I thought you've been taking phone calls on it a lot. You've been liking it.
Well, I did, you know, like, but... In the office, it's great. In a quiet environment where there's no one around and it's just, you know, nice and quiet.
Yeah.
It's great. It's fantastic. It couldn't be better. But then, like, you know, anywhere else, it's awful. Like the car, you can't do it. and in a cafe or like on the street, you know, I mean, I've tried it in a bunch of places now. And even out in the street, like I'm on my quiet street, I can barely hear a thing.
Yeah, the mic is so far away from your mouth. It just has to boost the gain like crazy if it's not like right in front of your face.
And the speaker too, you know, like there was no traffic around and I couldn't, I still couldn't hear anything.
Well, and to your point, when you're staying up someone's nose, this always happens to me when I FaceTime with people. They hold the iPad like in their lap where they normally hold it, right? And you're looking right up their schnoz.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. And with the watch, it would be even worse because you're like, it's strapped to your arms. You're literally holding it in front of your face.
Yeah, I am really skeptical. Plus, it's all Dick Tracy, right? So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical. I don't, you know, I no doubt they're looking at it, you know, and they're probably experimenting with it because it seems a natural thing to do. But it can't be any good for, you know. I don't think it could be good for communicating, and it's definitely no good for taking pictures or anything else.
And the battery life, taking a video call on your Apple Watch, it's got to be a massive drain on the battery.
Yeah.
Some of the other features that they are potentially building in, they're bolstering the Wi-Fi so it has greater dependence from or independence from your iPhone, which I'm all for. I want to see those two devices become totally independent. I hate that they're tethered together. So that would allow you to do things like fast messaging, text messaging, emailing, and getting your weather data without being connected to your iPhone all the time. I got to say, I used Apple Pay on my Apple Watch yesterday for the first time, now that my local Trader Joe's has it, and it's pretty awesome, Buster.
Oh, dude, I use it any opportunity available, to be honest.
I do too, although I felt like a total goon when they first told me it worked. I kept holding up my Apple Watch to the terminal, and it just wouldn't work.
Uh-huh.
And I could not figure out how to get it to work. I had to go home and watch a YouTube video to actually figure out how to do it. So, yeah, like, the secret is it's not the same as your iPhone. You have to double tap on the button on the side, not the digital crown, the button, and it brings up all of your Apple Pay cards. But what I also didn't realize is you actually have to add your cards to every device. It's not like it works via iCloud or anything, which I guess is good. So if you want to use Apple Pay on your iPhone, you have to add all your cards to your iPhone. Well, you have to do the same thing on your Apple Watch. I had no idea it worked that
way. Thanks for telling us this. But
Well,
we've only been using it for months, so we really
have. You been using your Apple Watch for Apple Pay, Leander?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's awesome.
Where do you guys shop that even accepts this thing? Because
Walgreens and Whole Foods
here, they accept it.
Special K, is that what you said?
No, Circle K.
Sorry.
Yeah, like all the gas stations here usually do.
Okay, so you guys have actually had purpose to use Apple Pay. I literally shop nowhere that has it. So when I did have an opportunity, I would end up using my iPhone. But you know what, Leander? I'm sure there's people out there who are just getting their Apple Watches. Now they're available in the Apple Store.
Yeah, you're right.
You could go in there and get your Apple Watch, and they're going to be like, oh, that Airfon, he's a real chum. Thanks, old chum, because now I know. Now I know. Because it is confusing. In fact, our pal With Hearts, he got his Apple Watch finally, Instagrammer With Hearts. You should go check him out, by the way. He's got amazing photographs. And he got his Apple Watch, and the very first thing he tweeted me was, I have no idea how to use this thing.
Right.
Is it not super confusing when you get your Apple Watch, how to use it? I found it to be very confusing.
Yeah. It is.
Yes.
It is.
Stop That's making true. Fun of me, Leander. Jeez.
I know, yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah. Everyone knows that, Airfon. I know, yeah. It is annoying. I'm sorry.
Calling me out in front of our audience of several hundred thousand people.
Jeez. Yeah, kind of unforgivable. I do apologize.
I mean, naturally, I figured it out very quickly. I just wanted to help the people, on our show who may not be as savvy as I am.
Right.
What?
Well, the false touch thing is totally confusing. You got to get used to that for a while. But then once you get used to that, then it does become
the force touch?
Yeah, because
that's
not obvious. A lot of stuff is hidden in the Force Touch.
Yes, not obvious at all. The first time I tried to switch my Apple Watch face, no idea how to do it.
Right. Yeah, me too.
I had to go to YouTube to find out.
Exactly. So did I.
Because Force Touch is a new paradigm, and you don't ever think that you could do something like that.
Well, you start hitting all the other buttons, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so the crown. Oh, nope, not that. And then the other one, and then it's like, nope, not that.
Totally. And when you press a screen, you never, at least in my mind, I never thought, oh, I need to press the screen harder, because that's not a mechanism you would ever use on a screen. On a button, of course, you do that all the time, but not on a screen. That makes absolutely no sense. In any case, I figured it out. It worked brilliantly. And the guy at Trader Joe's didn't even seem like he was that impressed. He was just like, oh, cool, man. He's like, could you move on?
I'll geek it out.
You were hoping he would give you some applause and, you know.
Super excited. Yeah, yeah. Let's see what other Apple Watch updates might we get. Oh, this will be really exciting for everyone. So apparently, and I know, Buster, you're not going to be surprised by this at all, but I am a little bit surprised by this. Apple Watch, the Gold Edition models must be selling pretty well, because Apple is reportedly looking into adding additional models costing anywhere between $1,000 and $10,000 in materials such as titanium. Titanium, what is that? That sounds fake. Tungsten, palladium, and platinum. So they're going to potentially bolster out or build out their entire line, bolster it with nicer materials. I got to say, though, I'm still shocked that people are buying watches that cost $10,000 from Apple. I know you were not, Buster. You're like, this makes total sense.
Yeah, I think the nicer watches, yeah, definitely do make sense. Because I like the Apple Watch Sport, but it doesn't look as great as like the stainless steel. And I would totally, I think maybe the next version or something, upgrade to like a nicer looking one.
Leander, you got the Sport Edition, right?
Yeah.
I think I might go the stainless steel edition next time too, especially if they add some more sensors. Would these features that I've described to you guys be, well, really, there's only two, and then some nicer materials. Would these be enough to excite you on an updated Apple Watch?
Those alone to like upgrade to it? No, yeah. Because the Wi-Fi thing is coming with watchOS, to where you know, other apps can like connect to Wi-Fi as well without right. The iPhone. So
right.
Maybe they'll just have like a better Wi-Fi antenna probably or something.
Yeah, but they're going right. to bolster the Wi-Fi internals just so it can handle, I guess, higher speed data transfers or something. But it's still going to be tethered reportedly to your iPhone, even in that case. Mm. So it's not going to be totally independent, although eventually it probably will be. But yeah, this isn't compelling at all to me. I would want to see some more sensors. I want more sensors. Sensors galore.
Yeah, I'd want at least GPS and a few other like fitness sensors if possible.
Yeah, I don't, more sensors, more body sensors.
Body sensors, yeah, for sure. I would love to get blood pressure. I think that would be awesome.
I want blood glucose.
Blood. Can they just read that off your skin without having to take your blood? Is that something they can test?
I read apparently, yeah, there are, yeah.
That would be incredible. Revolution for people with diabetes as well.
Okay. Well, and people who like to eat donuts like me.
You want to know how many minutes off your life have been taken with
you know, you stuff one in your face and then your phone starts wigging out and flashing red lights, warning, you know, your blood sugar levels spike some super dangerous level.
You know, that would probably deter you from altering your diet, don't you think?
No. I think it would have a big effect. Because, you know, like a lot of people have been talking about how the circles interface has been, you know, prompting them to get up and take walks and to pay more attention to their activity levels.
You mean the activity app? Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. So, it does for me, too.
Well, I just ignore it. But
Me, too.
and I feel I always feel guilty about it because it keeps going off. And I just, you know, every time I look away, there's a pang of guilt there. But. I think with other stuff, with diet stuff, I think I would definitely pay more attention to it.
I think that information actually does. Not everyone, but it helps some people alter their life. I mean, I certainly am standing more, and when I can see on the activities app that I haven't walked or something or have been active for a few days, it makes me guilty enough where I actually go do something.
Oh, well, there
Leander,
you go.
You're just getting the guilt. You're not getting any benefits of the guilt.
Well, I've had years of that anyway, right? Every time I take my shirt off to get in the shower, I'm like, I get the same feeling.
So you've just grown accustomed to that feeling. Right. So it's not really, yeah. So, it's just confirming what you already knew. Yep. All right. Well, before we move on, I want to say thank you to QuickBooks for supporting this episode. Gosh, there are a few things I really hate in life. Can I tell you about some things I hate, Leander? I know you like talking about things that you hate. Let's see. Waiting at the DMV, getting your tooth filled or getting dental work done, waiting in traffic when you're in your car, and paying taxes. Those are up really high on my list. So I am all for tools in my life that help me to avoid things that I hate. And paying taxes is one of those things that it's like a double slap to the face, because A, you got to pay your taxes, right? But then it usually takes forever to figure out what you owe, and you got to go through all this headache to figure all that stuff out. So that's where QuickBooks Self-Employed comes in. It, A, helps you separate your business and personal expenses, so you can track what you spent for work and then what you spent on yourself. This is critical. If you have a business, you have to keep your expenses separate. And then also, QuickBooks Self-Employed helps take the guesswork out of your estimated quarterly and year-end taxes. So, you know, if you know you're going to owe taxes by the end of the year, it's nice to know that ahead of time, so you have the money set aside. And then also, if you are an entrepreneur, if you have your own business, you know you got to pay quarterly taxes. It's not like you pay once a year. You have to pay every quarter. The IRS expects their check. So you need to be prepared for that. And that's where QuickBooks Self-Employed comes in. It helps you manage all that stuff, track all that stuff. And then when you're ready, it shows you exactly how much you owe. And then it will actually help you facilitate and make that payment. And it takes a lot of the stress out of the situation. It takes a lot of the wasted time out of the situation. And plus, QuickBooks helps you to maximize your deductions, like home office deductions and mileage. So you can actually keep more of the money that you earn, which is the name of the game. When you don't want to give it to the IRS, you want to keep it in your pocket. Find out what QuickBooks Self-Employed can do for you, and also receive 50% off their service. Head on over to tryselfemployed.com/cultcast. That's tryselfemployed.com/cultcast. I want to thank QuickBooks Self-Employed for supporting this episode. Buster, we got some great news this week. Well, great news for us. The FCC slammed AT&T with a $100 million fine. And I felt a little bad for AT&T, but I felt a great sense of satisfaction. Can you tell us what happened and why the FCC was not happy with AT&T? Buster.
Sorry, I totally had you muted during that commercial break.
Well, thank you for keeping all the extraneous sounds from my read there.
It's too bad, because I just get really excited about, you know, anytime something bad happens to AT&T.
Yeah, I am too, but I felt it was justified, because honestly, they basically got fined for advertising unlimited data plans. And I'm assuming this has a lot to do with the iPhone.
Yeah, it's, you know, unlimited means unlimited. So if you advertise that to customers, they basically told them they can't, you know, throttle people down without telling them, which was what AT&T was doing. You know, if you went, you know, over a certain cap, they'd make you on just horrible speeds. And so the FCC, I don't know, $100 million fine, though, is that worth it? I feel like it could have been bigger.
It probably could have been bigger, because AT&T, I would imagine, made a lot more than that from promising people unlimited iPhone or unlimited iPhone data plans. And then essentially, from what I read, they were cutting your speed down like 90% at a certain point. And isn't that funny? That's the thing. Those ads, I used to always see those ads, and they drove me crazy, because I knew AT&T was front and center, you know, unlimited data. I rarely saw anyone ever talk about the fact that it wasn't actually unlimited at all, because AT&T was going to throttle you if you reach a certain point. AT&T, of course, is saying they did nothing wrong and that this is just regular network monitoring. Yeah. I don't believe that for one freaking second. Do you?
I mean, I do. Yeah, I do think that they did something wrong, that they throttled the people. You know, like there's proof of that. And I don't think they shouldn't have promised unlimited speeds if like they financially like can't offer that, you know, if it's, you know, just not like a good business model for them, which it might not be. But I don't know. I just hate AT&T so much.
Or at least make it very clear. Make it very clear that it's unlimited. Unlimited speed up until a certain point. Because that's really what they're doing now, right? It's like it's unlimited, but they're gonna throttle you by 90%.
Yeah, I mean, I've had an AT&T unlimited plan ever since, I don't know, maybe since the first iPhone came out or so.
You're still on it.
Yeah,
wow.
I'm still on it. And they still do that whole, you know, throttling people down stuff.
That's crazy. Yeah, I finally made the switch. I was like, I can't handle this anymore.
Yeah. It's time for me too, I think, as well. Well, I just don't think that they can do like the unlimited plans, and they've moved far away from that too. They're doing those like the AT&T Next plans instead.
Yeah, I think they could. They just don't want to, because it's a lot easier to feign as though data is some precious resource. It's like water, where it's like, oh, we got to ration it out very carefully because there's only a limited amount of supply of data. It's like, no, data, all it is electrons moving along these pipes that you have. It doesn't cost you anything.
Well, but it's, the it's infrastructure costs them. You know.
The infrastructure costs them money. But once that's in place, it's like a cash cow. It's like a cash fire hose for them, because they can charge you whatever they want because they have the infrastructure. And then you can't say anything. You're drawing me in here. It's been too. I'm not following you down this rabbit hole. You guys know I feel passionately about getting screwed by telecoms. I don't like it one bit. So I'm happy that the FCC, they're on fire. This is really amazing that they're actually doing anything at all, let alone this is the largest FCC fine in history, I believe. Uh-huh. $100 million for false advertising. That's a pretty big deal, and I think it just goes to show that the FCC under Tom Wheeler is actually doing stuff to help consumers, which feels like they weren't previously. In any case, we should probably move on to the last segment of the show, I think, here, guys. Let's go ahead and do a What We're Into, where we could talk about literally anything. Anything you want to talk about, we can talk about. Something that you think is cool, let's talk about that. Does anyone want to go first?
I saw the new Jurassic World movie, and it was pretty cool.
Was it actually good?
You know what? It wasn't that good. The dinosaurs were good. The actors, the people, everything, all that sucked. But the dinosaurs, that was pretty cool.
So right. Do you feel like, so the new Jurassic World movie is the largest, or it had the biggest opening weekend ever.
Uh-huh.
So that's obviously a very big deal. Do you feel like that movie did really well just because the original Jurassic Park was so beloved?
Yeah, I think people were. I think, you know, it didn't have like the magic like that the first one did. But I did think Chris Pratt was really good. You know.
Good. Okay.
You know, I mean, I think, you know, he's just like the next Harrison Ford or something like that.
He's so on fire right now, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's probably going to be in the next Indiana Jones. I can't think of an actor who would be better than him.
Yeah. No.
Definitely not Bradley Cooper.
No.
Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage? He would actually be pretty awesome as the next Indiana Jones.
He should be the next Indiana Jones.
God, that'd be awesome. I just feel like people would laugh a little bit too much at that movie, though.
Yeah, they probably would.
Nobody laughs at Tyrion, though. That's the, you know, like, he's not like a comedic character at all. So, I mean, I think he is like a super.
You don't think Tyrion Lannister's a comedic character? He's totally comedic.
No, but he is. But at the same time, I mean, he's a funny guy and like witty. But like his, you know, you don't like laugh at like Tyrion, you know, in the middle of a fight or something like that. And he also has emotional depth that, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I think the fact that he owns what he is what makes him such a badass. Because like, he doesn't care. He's like, I'm a dwarf. And I wear that proudly. And so no one, and he even says that in episode one.
Yeah.
He's like, if you wear it as a shield, no one will be able to harm you. Or I'm paraphrasing there badly, but, and it's true. And so he comes off as being a total badass. I think that Leander, funny enough, I do think that if they put him in that role, he could probably do it, but they never would do it.
No.
Yeah. Well, the Indiana Jones character in the first movie anyway was, you know, like, he should have been more nerdy, I think. They didn't really play. That's the kind of what I liked about him, that he was a bit, you know, he was supposed to be an academic who had this other side. And I don't think Chris, what's his face, brings that to
it. Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Chris Pratt, yeah. He's too much of a, you know, lunk.
He can't really pass off as a smart guy.
No intellectual depth.
Well, actually, in Jurassic Park, he's, you know, supposedly, you know, super in touch with the animals and really gets them. And I wouldn't say that it comes off like funny or wacky. You know, he does kind of seem like a bit of a badass, but.
Did you see that meme where all these zookeepers are now posing?
Yeah, I love that.
That was great. I really like that.
It's kind of an iconic scene. It's funny. It's already become a meme.
Yeah.
Okay, Leander, what do you got?
Actually, I'm using the Amazon Echo, you know, the. That's a weird cylinder.
I remember making fun of you quite a bit that you ordered it. You like it?
Yeah, no, I really do like it. Yeah, it's actually, and I think it has a lot to do. It tells us a lot about Siri. And what Apple should do with Siri. Like, it just sitting here on my desk, and it's really sensitive, and it's amazing. You know, like you say, "Hey, Amazon," and every time you do that, it wakes up, and it's super easy to give it all sorts of commands. You know, like play certain kinds of music, and that's become my favorite way to like get music to play or to put the radio on.
Wow,
because it's so easy. You know, I would love to see that come to Apple devices more. And like, if they, I mean, like, why don't they add Siri to El Capitan to OS 10?
Yeah.
Because you know that would be, I think, a natural place to do it. And also, they do it with your iPhone, but of course, you have to have it plugged in, right, to wake it up.
Leander, tell me more about the Amazon Echo. So it's a speaker. For those that don't know what it is, it's like a cylinder. It sits on somewhere in your house, and you're supposed to work with it with your voice, and it's supposed to do all these things for you, like play music, like Leander said. But what else does it do? Because it doesn't really seem like a compelling product so far.
Shop from Amazon.
Yeah, you can also shop from Amazon.
New wipes or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, you know,
order wipes. Yeah, good call.
Well, this is, you know, this is what they did in their video, and this is why people were making fun of it, because it was like, oh no, you know, it's another horrible sort of, you know, tie-in to their to their main shopping service, you know. And this is the same thing with the Fire Phone, right? Why people hated that, because it was so tightly integrated into all of Apple's shopping services. But so you can order stuff, and you know, you can just tell it, you know, order some wet wipes, and it'll add that to a list, a one-click shopping list. But you can also like ask it questions. You can ask it stuff about, you know, the kind of stuff you'd look up on Wikipedia. You can ask about weather, sports scores, traffic. It'll warn you about traffic if there's traffic on the way home. And a bunch of other stuff that I haven't really used it for. I mean, like, really, I don't think I've really tapped its potential at all. I've got to sit down and really figure out, you know, what it can do and what it's good for. Like I said, for the moment, you know, I've been really using it for stupid stuff, like asking about the weather, which you know, the time, and also play music. I haven't really used it for its full potential yet, but it seemed really promising, though. And I was surprised. Like, what I liked about it was always accurate, and it's always there. You know, it's
listening,
really easy,
watching, thinking.
Yeah, just to yell out across the room. It's really, it's a lot easier than it is like pressing a button on your phone or trying to wake up some device. You know, even holding it, you know, lifting your wrist up. I've been using Siri on the watch a lot more. But I liked it. Yeah, I quite liked it. And if Siri ever becomes as good as this does, then I think it's really going to be great, because it's totally like Star Trek, you know, where you can talk to a computer and actually it doesn't misunderstand what you say and actually gives you some, and it works like it should. That's what I liked about it.
Interesting. Yeah, you're making a good case for it. I almost ordered the same thing, and then right before they sent me an email. They're like, you're now able to order your Amazon Echo because they put you on like a waiting list or something.
Right.
And I was like, last minute, I was thinking to myself, I just don't know what I'm going to use this thing for, so I canceled my order. But I guess the music thing would actually be pretty cool. And even if that's all you used it for, it's only $100, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a bit expensive for that kind of, you know, just for that. And it actually sounds really pretty good. And, you know, like now when I listen to the radio at work, I'm just like, hey, Amazon, you know, play Radio 1. And it's like, bing, it does it.
It can play actual radio stations?
Yeah, and it's streaming it from, you know, BBC Radio 1 from London, which I, so it's super easy, and it's great, it's accurate, never screws up. So it's kind of expensive, I think, for that, you know, just for that, just to have like a, you know, radio player that you can talk to. There's probably,
I don't know, I mean, Bluetooth speakers, airport speakers cost $100 easy, and then don't have any voice commands.
Well, I would buy the Ultimate Ears, the cylindrical speaker they've got, which is a battery powered, you know, portable Bluetooth speaker, which sounds absolutely fantastic. It's a great sounding speaker. And I would, you know, like, to be honest, I would rather do that and fiddle around with my phone playing it through Bluetooth.
I know, because that would probably sound better, and then you have...
Like, and it's more portable.
Yeah, right. All righty, well, my pick, it's tough because I've got some good TV shows that I'm into right now, but in the spirit of E3 week, so for those of you that don't know, I love video games. It's E3 week, which is the biggest... showcase of video games each year, where all the big publishers and developers come together. You guys didn't watch any of this, I'm sure, huh? Buster, you said you didn't watch it.
I mean, I caught little bits of news from it here and there.
Okay, so lots of huge stuff got announced. Did you guys see the HoloLens demonstration by Microsoft.
I saw the Minecraft demo. Oh,
did that not blow your mind?
I don't play Minecraft.
I don't play Minecraft either. Cool. Yeah. But it wasn't about the Minecraft. It was about being able to wear the HoloLens on your face. And I'll link to the demonstration video in the show notes so everyone can check this out if they want.
Was it like the other demo video they did, which is like a lot of smoke and mirrors, I felt? You know, there was... It looks super compelling and it looks amazing, but, you know, they've put that together in a special effects package, right? So...
No, this was a live on stage demonstration and you were seeing what the HoloLens was seeing.
Okay.
So it was totally different. It was a live demo.
Okay.
And what it was this guy was looking at a blank table and he asked the HoloLens to put the game onto the table, and immediately the surface of the table disappears and a digital world is built right before your eyes that it's completely three-dimensional. He was walking around it, looking inside of it. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. That's not going to be my pick. I was just totally blown away. And all that to say, E3 had a lot of really excellent announcements. And my favorite one was probably Fallout 4, which is this huge open-world game that is made by a studio called Bethesda. I played a bunch of the other Fallout game series, and they're incredibly immersive and fun. And they recently released a free-to-play iPhone game called Fallout Shelter. Good name. And I've only been playing with this a little bit, but the premise of Fallout is you're inside of this vault when a nuclear explosion goes off and the vault protects your life, right? And there's people living in the vault, and then you immerse later. And that's like when the fallout or when the nuclear battle is over and people like come to the surface to try to live. That's the basis of the game. Well, the Fallout Shelter is you inside the vault. And it's you get to create your own vault and you have to manage like your population. It's kind of like SimCity in a way.
It reminded
How would you
me
describe
a little
it,
bit,
Buster?
Isn't it like Tiny Tower?
Yes, yes.
Only you're building down instead of up.
Yes, that's a great example. So it's like a tower defense game. And from what I've played of it so far, it's really quite fun. And the Fallout art style, I think, is incredible. Just beloved by fans. It's free to play. If you want to buy, they have some in-app purchases, but you don't need them at all. They really built the game to be fun, and you don't need the in-app purchases to play like you do with some other games. And actually, it recently just beat out Candy Crush as the most profitable game on the App Store. Did you hear about this, Buster?
I saw John did some post about that.
Yeah, just
so Candy Crush Saga, I guess, has been in like the number one spot for, I don't know, a bazillion years. And what John Brownlee was saying in his piece on Cult of Mac is in order to keep that spot, you got to be selling a ton of in-app purchases, and the company that makes Candy Crush Saga was making $2.5 million a day. Jeez. A day in in-app purchases. And they've been there forever, and now all of a sudden Fallout Shelter is at the number one spot. Who knows how much they're making, but presumably it would be more than $2.5 million. $2.5 million a day, Leander! For digital goods.
That's nearly as it's coming pretty close to what Cult of Mac makes.
Almost. Almost. Yeah. I mean, that's how baller these guys are.
Yeah, right.
Can you imagine selling a digital good? All it is an entry in a database. That's all you're selling to somebody. Your computer makes an entry in a database, and now they have a product that doesn't even exist, and you're making $2.5 million a day.
Better than selling drugs.
I don't know. That's a pretty lucrative business, I've heard.
Much more risky, though. No one's going to go to jail for this.
No one's going to get shot up over this. Yeah, you won't have to defend your turf. Yeah, I guess there are some pros. So, in any case, Fallout Shelter, available on the App Store. It's like the editor's choice, of course, because Apple's promoting this thing like crazy.
That was the thing you were the most excited about from
E3? Well, it was one of the things that I'm most excited about that is applicable to this show. Because okay. I could have talked more about the HoloLens. I could have talked more about Fallout 4. In fact, I think probably one of the biggest things I was excited about was, and the big surprise for I think a lot of people, is Xbox announced that they are supporting all the 360 games back catalog. So now you'll be able to play 360 games on your Xbox One. But that doesn't really That doesn't really apply to our show. It's not going to get you.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people listen to the show are gamers for sure. I bet they have Xboxes.
Yeah, that's probably true. So now is like a better time. I mean, essentially, Microsoft just killed the 360. Because if you can play a majority, if not all of your 360 games on the Xbox One, right. Which right now it's only a selection of games, but eventually it'll be a lot more. Well, then why do you need your 360 anymore? So essentially they just killed it, I think. So I would say that was the thing I was most excited about.
What about the VR stuff? Did you see any of those demos?
Well, the HoloLens is VR.
Okay, well, you know, the Oculus stuff.
No, they didn't show any of that at the E3 presentation, although I think that's going to be massive. That's going to be the future.
They showed off, like, the new controllers, and they showed off the consumer prototype or final consumer version. Was that not at E3?
Well, if they showed it at E3, they didn't show it at Microsoft's press conference.
Owned by Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's going to be incredible, though. I really do think that's going to be the future of iOS gaming and also of Xbox gaming. You just put on a mask and get... Have you guys ever used the Oculus Rift?
Mm-hmm.
They're incredible. They're really incredible. I used one. It wasn't even the newest version. It was an SD version, so a standard definition version. The ones they have now, I think, are 1080p. And you put it on, it's a little jarring at first to your senses because you have this three-dimensional perspective, but you're not moving anywhere. And then once the game gets going, I found it to be one of the most immersive game-playing experiences I've ever had. And once they bring that to iOS and you can do those kinds of things on your iPhone, it's going to be a match made in heaven. We're going to be like those. We're going to be one step closer to those people in Wall-E. You know, when they're all just floating around in their chairs.
We're like the Matrix. We'll all be sitting there, right, with these masks on.
Yeah, that's right.
It'll be horrible. Dystopian nightmare.
Somebody boot up the program with the girl in the red dress. That's all I got to say. Eyebrow raise. You know what I'm talking about, Leander. Don't pretend like you don't. Okay, well, with that said, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. I want to thank everyone for staying tuned all the way to the end. I want to thank QuickBooks Self-Employed for supporting this episode. Check them out. tryselfemployed.com/cultcast. This is all the cultcast we have for you guys this week, but if you want to come hang out with us on Twitter, we would so much enjoy that. I'm at Arifon Leanders, L. Kenny Busters, BST3R, and of course, for all the best news, reviews, and how-tos in the world of Apple, make sure you're following Cult of Mac. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. I thought you were going to do a Buster.
Yeah,
you cleared your throat or something. I was like, oh, he's going to do it. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. And then you were silent.
Oh, you're videoing it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Enjoy that view.
Oh, man. Look at that. Those green threads.
Should I make them bounce for you?
Oh, my gosh. They're just so jiggly. So.
Mr. International Peck Bouncer 2012 winner right here.
How do you get them so bouncy like that? Just lots of working out, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, and then illegal injections in Mexico. Key ingredient.
You got to be careful. They'll give you some weird shit down there.
I don't even know what's in that syringe, but man, I can bounce my pec so good now.